Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Buckeye Weekly Podcast. I am Tony Gerdeman here, as always, with Tom Orr. Tom, how's it going?
Tony, it's kind of delightful to not be sitting on a tiny bench in a cramped hotel room and doing this as we have been for the last week or so. You know, obviously, I think we're hoping to be covering at least one more football game this year, but it is not terrible to be back home after a long bowl trip.
Yeah, and I don't know if we would have been able to take that bench with us to Los Angeles anyway. I don't know if we could check that or if it certainly wouldn't have fit in the overhead. But yes, we are both back home, and it's good to be home finally, yes.
Yeah, and you know, even if we had checked it, apparently based on everyone else's experience this week, there's no guarantee we would have gotten it in LA when we got to the airport. So,
but I've seen with Southwest and all of these airlines, you can get reimbursed by them. So I don't know how you get reimbursed for a bench that you've stolen from a hotel, but they're going to have so many issues. They're probably just going to start signing stuff off. Like, yes, okay, you get them the bench, and so boom, we could have had a bench. It would have been nice. I would have not liked to use it anymore for that purpose, but...
And according to the form that we fill out with Southwest, it was made of silver, so it was a very nice bench, and we're a little bit upset about it. But that's okay. That's all right.
My family heirloom bench has been lost. But, so Tom, I know when we were talking about what to do with this show, we decided to come up with reasons for Buckeye fans to still be optimistic. And I do think that they came away... I think a lot of people had to come away from that game with optimism and not one of these things like, you know, this is the end of the world, like a 41-14 loss to Florida, or the follow-up loss to LSU, or 31-0 to Clemson. Like, this wasn't one of those games where you walk away saying, you know, how are we ever going to get back? I think you walk away from this feeling pretty good. And so I think maybe we just stoke those fires and keep Buckeye fans up as they have to watch now New Year's Day plus one bowl games and then the final playoff game.
Yeah, and it does feel like there's a lot of reason for optimism, and that game maybe showed Ryan Day some things that I think other people may have seen that he was hoping to not do, or his nature was not to do them, and now he's sort of seen like, hey, here are the results, and you're seeing the results, and so okay, carry these things forward. Because you know, you go to a functional road game against the team that is the consensus number one team in the country and basically have them. And then even when even after you have given up all those points in the fourth quarter, you still have a chance to win in the final minute. You know, I mean, that has sort of reestablished Ohio State as, yes, they are, in fact, still in the tier of the sport that you expect them to be. So, and, you know, now we can give you some reasons why we think they should remain in that spot, in that tier of the sport moving forward. So why don't you go ahead and go first?
Well, I think we all know CJ Stroud is leaving. And so the first thing I have here is that Ryan Day has yet to fail to find a starting quarterback. And he's had three first time starting quarterbacks at Ohio State. That was Dwayne Haskins in 2018. Justin Fields in 2019, and C.J. Stroud in 2021. The average season for those three guys has been 4,179 yards passing, completing 69.9% of their passes, 45 touchdowns, and 5.5 interceptions for first-time starters. And so that's what Ohio State is going to have next year with Kyle McCord or Devin Brown, or perhaps Lincoln Kienholz. But I think the concern, when you look at next season for any college football team, you just start at quarterback, and Ohio State will have a new starter. But Ryan Day's history of new starters has been elite, and it's going to result in three first-round picks eventually. You know, Dwayne Haskins, Justin Fields, and C.J. Stroud will be selected in the first round next spring, this spring, whichever you consider it. But, yeah, just looking at these, 50 touchdowns for Dwayne Haskins, 41 touchdown passes for Justin Fields, 44 for C.J. Stroud in their first seasons. I think this is one of those rare instances where maybe a new starting quarterback is not a concern.
Well, I think another reason it's not a concern is you don't have all your eggs in one basket. This is not, well, we've got this one five-star guy, and as long as he doesn't get hurt and as long as he continues to develop, it'll be fine. you have a couple five-star guys. And, you know, I'm going to sort of set Lincoln Kienholz off to the side here, because if you're a first-year guy going up against a third- and second-year guy, you're going to probably start the, you know, either the third- or second-year guy. So we'll set Kienholz aside for right now and just talk about Devin Brown and Kyle McCord. And they both came in with five-star ratings. They both have had a couple of years developing under Ryan Day, which is what, you know, C.J. Stroud had. And Dwayne Haskins kind of came in the first year and had to do it under Ryan Day. And Justin Fields came in and had to do it the first year under Ryan Day. And all of those guys have worked out just fine. And so I think I can't tell you with any great deal of certainty which of the guys will be the starter this fall. But the fact that you've got, you know, all the track record you've mentioned, plus you have two different guys where if one of them, if it's not clicking for one of them or whatever, one of them gets hurt, you still have another five-star guy waiting in the wings. So you only have to bat 500 here. You don't have to bat 1,000 on the quarterback. So yeah, I think I'm going to lump that in with yours, but I think that's a, you know, that's a real reason for optimism. Let's go to the other side of the ball, because I know the defense has been a source of a lot of consternation for Ohio State fans. I'm just going to read through Jim Knowles' defenses at Oklahoma State in his first 4 years in terms of yards per play, because this is a stat that sort of smooths out the tempo and all that kind of stuff. So just yards per play allowed. His first year there in 2018, they were 99th in yards per play allowed. The second year, he was 81st. His third year, he was 32nd. His fourth year, they were 5th. Ohio State this year was 36th in yards per play allowed. And that was a little better than last year when they were 43rd. But man, it sure seems like there's a little bit of a track record where he gets there. The first year, it's not great. The second year, it's better. And then, boy, the third year, it really starts to take off. They don't have to be incredible next year. They just have to be better. And, you know, when you see the trend line at Oklahoma State, it's hard to think that they won't be better next year.
Yeah, that was one of mine as well. I've, you know, wrote more than five, but I have that down the line as well because it's proven. And so, you know, he knows that he doesn't have the same amount of time at Ohio State that he did at Oklahoma State. But I also don't think he was starting at square one. He's probably starting at about square four of seven squares. You know, he's already ahead of where he was at Oklahoma State, and he has said that. So, you know, maybe this year one Ohio State is like year three at Oklahoma State, and year two at Ohio State is like year four at Oklahoma State, where you go from the 30s to the top five. And I really think that's where they will expect to be. And that's they, as you said, they don't need to be there. But if they are, then now you've got a defense that is carrying an offense almost as they, you know, find a new quarterback and who knows what's going to go on with the running game. But yeah, regardless of the losses, I think they will be better next year. Obviously, they have to be better, and they have more options to some of the younger guys from the 2022 class that weren't really ready to go could now start pushing for playing time against guys that tried this year and also failed. So more pressure on those guys, more competition all around, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to steal the next one because that sort of transitions neatly into one of my other ones, which was, you know, Ohio State teams that are national championship kind of teams, so often it's second and third year guys who are playing really key roles on those teams. Like you'll have the Mike Doss fourth year senior kind of thing, but so often it's, you know, 2014, the Joey Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott and all those guys. This year, coming up, 2023, here's some of the second and third year guys on defense. JT Tuimoloau, CJ Hicks, Sonny Styles, Denzel Burke, Jordan Hancock, J.K. Johnson, Steel Chambers. I'm counting Steel Chambers because it's his third year at linebacker. Mike Hall, Tyleek Williams. I mean, on and on and on. These are all guys who, Jack Sawyer, these are all guys who came in relatively highly ranked. And they're guys who you have seen some, and there's generally been some encouraging signs and some encouraging flashes. And sometimes it's, you know, just sort of physical development that they need to kind of get better to, you know, continue their growth and continue that upward trajectory. Sometimes it's technique stuff. Sometimes it's just all field maturity stuff. Like whatever it is, you just kind of continue to see improvement from some of those guys. You've seen enough flashes that you don't need all of those guys to hit and become superstars. but you have so many choices there that, you know, this is sort of the point in a guy's career where either it's the first year to second year where you sort of see the most growth, or it's the second year to the third year where, well, this is a contract year for JT Tuimoloau now. This is a contract year potentially for Denzel Burke, for Tyreek Williams, Mike Hall. I mean, all those guys. That's a lot of times where you see that big leap, like we saw with J.K. Dobbins, for example, a couple of years ago, where freshman year was pretty good, sophomore year was a little disappointing, and then third year he just exploded. If you have that kind of trajectory for someone like Denzel Burke or someone like J.T. Tuimoloau, who, you know, those guys didn't have disappointing years this year, but if you have that kind of leap there, boy, you are set up to potentially have some real impact players on defense, which would only help with that Jim Knowles trend line we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, just the defensive line alone, those third year guys, the upcoming juniors of JT Tuimoloau, Mike Hall, and Jack Sawyer, and if Tyreek Williams can put it together and get in that mix as well, that's fine. But you look this year, Jack Sawyer tied Mike Hall for the team lead in sacks, which I don't know if a lot of people realize that. Jack Sawyer, a lot of times, you know, you're like, well, where was the expected Jack position to, you know, to wreck things? And of course, you know, it's more of a run stopping than doesn't necessarily have to be a pass rushing thing, even though at Oklahoma State last year there was definitely a pass rushing thing. And so you look at that, you project that to Jack Sawyer, and you're like, well, that didn't happen. What's wrong? And he still helped lead the team with 4.5 sacks. And JT Tuimoloau, I think he had 4 sacks. You're like, yeah, was that enough? And then he was like, well, he had 11 tackles for loss. You know, second on the team behind Tommy Eichenberg. Mike Hall played about, you know, a third of the snaps that people think he should, and he was still very productive. So what happens when those are the three main guys, assuming that whatever Mike Hall was dealing with is in the past, next year, and if you've got those three guys and whomever else at defensive tackle and some of the young guys step up, you know, you'll be fine. But having those guys is key, and that's something definitely to be optimistic about. My next one, that was one of mine, but I've got plenty of time. Don't worry, I'm going to be okay. My next one is very simple. Marvin Harrison and Emeka Ebuka are coming back. And that's, nothing more needs to be said, Tom. Like, you get those two guys back, another year of Emeka, and we know what Marvin, like, he's not even a finished product yet, but, you know, you could certainly send him out on the store shelves and people will buy him up. You know, he is elite, and Emeka is going to be elite, and Emeka's already, you know, an 1,100-yard receiver, so he's as good as most people would love to have in the country, and he was very effective against Georgia on those routes, and when the focus was on Marvin, Emeka got him, and so those two coming back, that sets the tone right there, that you have to be serious about defending those guys. They're going to be very good, they're going to be very productive, and they're going to help the running game. They're going to help, you know, whatever tight end, whatever. It'll be interesting to see where Emeka is next year. Is he still in the slot? What happens with Julian Fleming? Do they want to get some of these young guys involved? But the fact that you have those two guys coming back means that you can answer all of these other questions in the process of keeping those two on the field.
Yeah, and beyond them, you've got Julian Fleming. You've got Jaden Ballard, who, you know, certainly seems like he's trending towards being a downfield threat for them. You've got the four freshman running wide receivers from this previous year who, you know, I think everyone probably was fairly disappointed with their production compared to previous years. But, you know, this is another thing with like the two starting quarterbacks where, or the two, you know, the two returning quarterbacks where you don't need all four of those guys to hit. You need one or two of those guys to hit. And Brian Hartline's hit rate has been probably at least 50%. So you get two of those guys to hit, add them to the rotation. You've got a whole nother class of stud freshman wide receivers coming in this year. Maybe you get something out of at least one of those guys. And all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, you're looking at, again, one of the most talented and deepest wide receiver rooms in the country, led by Marvin Harrison, led by Emeka Ebuka. Yeah. And, you know, this is even a year where if it's Kyle McCord coming in, Kyle McCord and Marvin Harrison have a little bit of history. They played together in high school, so they know each other very well. I'm going to guess that they have spent a lot of hours throwing inside the Woody, you know, the two of them together. So, you know, that you are potentially set up for you know, that is, I guess, maybe the most next man up position at Ohio State, where it's just, okay, these guys, the assembly line has kept moving, and now this guy is going to be a first round pick in the NFL. And then, okay, well, here's the next group of guys who are going to be first round picks in a year. And it just kind of keeps moving like that. So yeah, that's a good one for sure. I'm going to say, boy, you have a lot of talented running backs back. We don't know exactly who's going to be back yet, but it almost doesn't matter. You've got, take your pick of whichever of Mayan Williams, if he comes back, if, you know, he doesn't declare for the NFL, Travion Henderson, Evan Pryor, you've got Dallin Hayden, you've got Chip Traynham, you've got, if Xavier Johnson comes back, you can maybe throw him in that pile as well. It's just a very talented group where Ohio State does not need a 2,000-yard rusher like they had with J.K. Dobbins. But even if you say, okay, one of those guys transfers, or one of those guys declares for the NFL, or one of those guys decides he doesn't want to come back for another year, whatever it is, you still have a really, really deep, talented room. And you know, this is sort of the upside of everyone getting hurt this year is, boy, you have a lot of guys who now have played and have now, you know, you have film to teach off of. It's probably encouraging to them that they have played and gotten carries in big moments. So it feels like, again, you don't need to hit on 100% of those guys for next year. If you just hit on 50 or 60% of them, you're going to have a pretty deep and pretty talented running back room.
It will be interesting to see how much the playing time for Dallin Hayden impacts what happens next year, because he was one of three running backs with over 100 carries this year. If everybody is back, I don't see Dallin Hayden getting another 100 carries. And you know, we don't put people into the portal on this show, but the math, because you're going to want to get Evan Pryor involved, so that's going to take some carries. And so there's going to be some, you know, difficult talks with some players about, you know, you may have had this many carries this year, but this is where things are looking potentially this year. And I don't know if you have those talks until after spring, because, you know, you have no idea what Evan Pryor is going to look like in the spring, how ready he will be able to go, if he will be able to go. And so maybe this will be a J.J. McCarthy, Cade McNamara situation where, you know, we'll just have to wait for the competition in the fall because one guy is injured. But it will be interesting to see how all of that shakes out as we now foolishly talk about Ohio State has too much running back depth. You know, but we shall see. Let's see. What should I go with now, Tom? How about this one? When the Ohio State defense doesn't keep them from the playoffs, Ryan Day somehow finds a way to get them there. And they do pretty well. 2020, with the pandemic, never knowing who was going to be in or out of the game, they get there. It's a different lineup almost every game. They beat Clemson by a lot. They end up, you know, just having going to the game against Alabama, not knowing, hearing rumors of who's not playing, and then, you know, stalking the buses to see who's getting into the hotel to see if, you know, who's missing, who's here. Was that Tommy Togiai? Yeah, was this, you know, who is that? And yet he still got them there. And it was a crazy season, a season unlike anything we have ever seen. Hopefully we'll ever see again. And they got there. And then, you know, 2019, obviously they overcame. They were better than Clemson that year, but they didn't get enough done. They had crazy plays in that game that kept them there. But this year, missing essentially your top three running backs against Georgia, you know, Mayan played sparingly. I wouldn't call him healthy. He scored a touchdown, but you know, this season missing Jackson Smith and Jigba, having Mayan and Travion up and down the entire season, having no Evan Pryor, as I said, Jackson Smith, and then you get to this late in the season, and you could throw in your losing Bradley Robinson as a long snapper. It's not nothing, and we saw that it was not nothing. But then you get to the Alabama or the Georgia game, and you miss those three running backs. You miss Jackson. You miss Marvin Harrison then going out. You had Kate Stover going out right away. G. Scott not being available for that game. Everybody just gets pushed up to the, up on the depth chart, and they scored over 40 points on Georgia, and they found a way. They just couldn't get that last field goal. So if the defense just gets things righted, Ryan Day finds ways to get things done. And that's, what's that, 3 of the 4 years he's been at Ohio State as the head coach, they've made the playoffs. And 3 of those 4 years, he's had defenses that are, that have, I think this is better than the 2020 and 2021 defense, but we still saw what happened the last two games of the year.
Yeah, it feels like they're very close. They've made the playoffs 3 out of the 4 years. They lost the first one on a heartbreaking interception in the final minute. They lost this one on a heartbreaking missed field goal in the final seconds. They have been, they are 2 plays away from being in the national championship game 3 out of 4 years. And, I'm sure that Ohio State fans are frustrated with the fact that eventually their luck will even out in those kind of moments, but it hasn't yet. So I'm sure that's frustrating, but there is a certain point of, this is a one game season in these playoffs, and you got to get there and you got to be competitive, and then you see where it goes from there. And they have been there. They have not had a 31-0 game in the playoffs. They have been, when they've gotten there, they've been very competitive. They've played, and they have come from behind. They came from behind in the Rose Bowl last year, where they are not playing non-competitive football. They are right there each of these years. And, this is one of these, eventually the ball's going to bounce your way. You cannot have stuff that bounces against you in every possible, crucial moment forever. That's just, eventually it will bounce your way. And I guess that will transition into my next one, which is, I think eventually the injury luck will bounce their way a little bit too. And I don't know what the cause of this year's injuries were. We talked about the split film turf that they put in. We've talked about, is it a strength and conditioning thing? We've talked about all sorts of stuff. Are they too physical in practice? Are they not physical enough in practice? Whatever it is, I'm sure they're going to be spending a lot of time trying to troubleshoot what the issue is and address it. And again, you don't need perfect. You're never going to have perfect health throughout the season. You just need to not lose all of your players all of the time. That needs to, that was a historically anomalous season in terms of number of injuries and crucial guys who you're missing in crucial moments. They were missing. They played, they started 4 or 5 cornerbacks this year. They started 4 running backs this year. You lost the guy who we were sort of projecting as the Biletnikoff potentially award winner this year, and Jackson Smith-Njigba. You basically didn't have him all season. You're playing the Peach Bowl without your top 3-4 running backs, without without your top wide receiver and without your second wide receiver for the fourth quarter of that game, without your top tight end. On and on and on. And just that is something that just based on pure luck and randomness, it's going to be better next year. And there's reasons to think that this team may take a slight step back in some areas, but it's going to be almost impossible for them to not be better on the injury front next year.
Yeah, and that luck even goes back to the 2020 game against Alabama, where Trey Sermon goes out of the game after the first play or whatever, and it's like this. At this point, Ryan Day has to be shaking his head at the number of guys they lose and when they lose them. And I don't know what you blame that on, but I know the way we are now, you got to blame it on something. So, is it some curse on Ryan Day or anything like that? Any theory you want to throw up on the board, strength and conditioning, whatever, but the turf, but why are they getting hurt elsewhere as well? It's bizarre. But like you said, eventually stuff has to even out and you go from there. How about this one? I do expect Tommy Eichenberg to return. I've had 2 different people telling me this. So you bring him back, you bring Steel Chambers back. He said he's returning. You add in CJ Hicks. You still have Cody Simon if he wants to stick around and be that second middle linebacker. I think having that back when Tommy Eichenberg got 120 tackles on the year, Steel Chambers runs around and is, as you said, Tom, this will be his third year at linebacker. This should be his best year so far. That allows you to, you know, run around, make plays. You look at Jim Knowles' defense. If you go look at his linebackers, they get better and better as well. And they were already very good this year. What would they look like next year, having an entire season with Jim Knowles? And now they know even more. And so I think you keep those two guys, you add in more guys, and I think everybody wants to see what CJ Hicks can do. It's just, where do you put him? How do you get him in there? Do you do a little bit of substitution? And they did some subbing with Cody Simon and Steel Chambers this year, earlier on in the year. So maybe there are some ways that you can do that. But I think having those linebackers back, and again, Tommy Eichenberg hasn't said anything yet other than he'll decide after the season, so I may be completely wrong about this. But if you get those two guys back and then you sprinkle in some other guys there at linebacker, I think that's a pretty good start to a back seven or front five, six, seven. And I could also go into reasons for optimism in the secondary, which I may end up doing before we're done.
Yeah, it does feel like that linebacker room has a lot of pieces that you could put together to have a pretty good year. And that is a group that Jim Knowles is working with closely himself. So you figure if the whole defense is trending positively, the linebackers are certainly going to be trending positively if Jim Knowles is kind of overseeing them himself. And yeah, if you get Tommy Eichenberg back, I think the Tommy Eichenberg decision is a really interesting one, because he's not going to be a first round pick almost regardless, because he doesn't necessarily have all the measurables. So do you come back if you're projected as a fourth round pick, or do you go because, you know, the reasons that you're a fourth round pick are not necessarily going to change between this year and next year? But, you know, he's someone who, if they get him back, he is as much of a sure thing as you could possibly have. And Steel Chambers had a really good Peach Bowl. That was he was one of those guys who, I think the performance maybe got a little bit lost with all the other stuff going on, but he played a really good game. And you can just kind of see the light coming on with those guys. They got so much better throughout the season that if you keep going with them, and if you have someone with like CJ Hicks, who has, you know, he does have the measurables, he does have all the stuff that the NFL is going to be looking for, him coming in a second year role, you know, does Sonny Styles slot in somewhere in that linebacker discussion, or does he stay at safety? I mean, there's a lot of reason for optimism with those linebackers. And yeah, it does feel like there's an awful lot of reasons to think that defense is going to be substantially better next year. My next one's a little off the board, but boy, Tony, you sure do keep hearing about Jim Harbaugh in the NFL. And if you were Jim Harbaugh, and you were in the Colts Ring of Honor, and the Colts job was open, and you had won two games in a row against Ohio State, and you'd gotten your team to the playoff 2 years in a row, I think that would be a very logical time for you to say, hey, look, we've done what we came here to do. We've won back-to-back Big Ten championships. We've beaten Ohio State back-to-back years. We've gotten to the college football playoff both years. You know, hey, the ball takes crazy bounces, and boy, we almost got him, but, you know, hey, this is the George Costanza go out on a high note, like, hey, good night, everybody. And if Jim Harbaugh leaves, you wonder if you can, you know, how long people can maintain that level, because that is a program that is not necessarily doing it with just sheer talent. They just are not, they're not out five-starring people. That's a very system, that is a very system team right now. And you wonder if you don't have Harbaugh there kind of holding everything together. And, you know, you saw the glowing think pieces about Biff Poggi, who was the, you know, sort of the culture guy and whatever. He also left. He took the job, I think, at Coastal Carolina, at Charlotte. He took the job at Charlotte. So he's gone. If Harbaugh leaves, you know, does Harbaugh take some of his coordinators with him? You know, the Michigan's moment in the sun may not last too long after Harbaugh leaves. You know, that they may sort of return to their historical level of norm, which is more of a 10-2 kind of team. So, you know, if Michigan stops being, you know, the last 2 years Michigan and goes back to even 2015 to 2019 level Michigan, that sort of changes what the 2023 schedule looks like for Ohio State, what the path to the Big Ten championship looks like for Ohio State. and, you know, what the path to the college football playoff looks like for Ohio State.
So you're saying if Jim Harbaugh is going to run terrified from Ohio State, now is the time to do it. You got the two wins, get out of town, get gone. Also, are there any Steinbrenners who can maybe see if J.J. McCarthy wants to play some third base?
J.J. McCarthy signed to a contract by the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's never been on ice skates before, but...
natural athlete. You know, don't knock it till you try it. I don't know how many I've had. I think maybe five or so, but I do also want to mention this is sort of an intangible one, and that Ohio State in this Peach Bowl, I think, earned some benefit of the doubt from a lot of college football people. The way they played, the way they were undermanned and still nearly won that game. And it's not a moral victory. It's just a, oh, okay. So this was Ohio State after talking about it. Ohio State physical. Are they tough? Are they this? Are they that? And they saw what they were. And it's like that. I think that made a lot of people take notice. And I think that can come into play next year when you have a new narrative. No longer is that narrative about toughness. The narrative is, well, they were right there. They played well. And then next year, when they have a schedule that likely gives them a loss at some point, the performance in this game, I think, gives them some credibility and some argumentable things that the committee will have to consider, or that the pundits will have to consider, at that, okay, Ohio State, we saw what they did against Georgia. There is something there, and one loss doesn't generally knock you out, but it's a better position to be in than one where you're like, oh, this team is soft. We see it every year, blah, blah, blah. They saw a new Ohio State, or I don't know if it's new, but they saw an Ohio State they weren't expecting, and that's kind of the last thing on their mind, and that's the last thing they'll leave from the season thinking about Ohio State.
Yeah, this was very different. You didn't hear the LOL Ohio State or the LOL Big Ten. I mean, the Big Ten just became the first team to lose two college football playoff games on the same day, and there was no LOL Big Ten at all, because both of those games were incredibly close, came down to the last minute, came down to maybe some questionable officiating, came down to just one play here or there. Both Ohio State and Michigan acquitted themselves extremely well on the college football playoff stage. You know, Ohio State, I think, had a tougher matchup than Michigan did, but nonetheless, it's you just need to not get 31-0. The narrative coming out of that day was, holy smokes, what a day of college football. Was this the best day of, you know, the best college football playoff day ever? Almost certainly. Was this one of the best days of college football ever? Maybe. It was, you just need to not get narratived. And Ohio State and Michigan did by far enough to not get narratived where it wasn't, you know, and we're recording this before New Year's Day. And we'll see, you know, the Big Ten is an underdog in all three New Year's Day games. So you'll see how that goes. But you remember the New Year's Day in, I don't know, 2012, maybe 2011, where the Big Ten went 0-5 on New Year's Day. And it was LOL Big Ten for the whole day. And this is the worst day of any conference ever. And yada, yada, yada. You didn't have any of that. So I think Big Ten, Michigan and Ohio State both are coming out of this with, you know, even the real mouth breathers from, you know, the SEC network, who can't wait to tell you that everything from the SEC is heads and shoulders above everything else. It's hard for them to spin it to, you know, boy, the SEC really dominated that slow, sorry Big Ten, didn't they? Like, no, they didn't. So that's definitely a positive. One more positive that for me is, I feel like Ryan Day may have learned the right lessons this time. That Ryan Day, there's a lot of stuff that we have sort of wondered about with Ryan Day, and is he gonna start making smarter decisions on fourth down, being a little more aggressive at times? There was a report, I saw something on our board about Kirk Herbstreit talking on game day about the fact that Ryan Day had mentioned in a production meeting that he was thinking about maybe giving up play calling. It's like, yes, these are all the things you should do, because guess what? It's almost impossible to be a head coach and a play caller at the same time. That almost never works well. You may have seen the light come on with that kind of stuff too, where some of the stuff we've been saying, hey, you should probably look at this, I think is actually getting looked at. And if you can take the defeats and, you know, learn lessons from them, you can take the injuries from this year and learn whatever lessons from them. You can take the strategic mistakes and learn lessons from them and get stuff better in the future, then you're better positioned for next year, the year after that, to not have the, well, we're going to punt in plus territory and we're going to give up a possession in a game where we're going to give up 40 points. Like, you can't do that. And it feels like maybe he's starting to get all of that stuff, which is, you know, that can only be a positive for them moving forward.
I think it's really difficult for them to find a better play caller than Ryan Day. But if the net positive is that he's got more time to focus on other stuff, and they're still scoring 40 points a game one way or another, or 45 points a game, then it works out. Because there were, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 issues during that game that I wonder if they would have been there if he's not so focused on what call is next. You know, it's the 12 men on the fake punt, which is insane to me that there's another issue like that on special teams. Or there were times where they had trying to put a tight end on the field because they only had 10 guys. Another time they're trying to throw another tight end out on the field, and Mitch Rossi's saying, no, we've got enough. And the coach is assuring him, no, we need one more out there. Like, that sort of stuff, where it just, there seems to be so much confusion, and you're wondering, like, why is there so much confusion this late in the season? And of course, once you get down to the fourth and fifth tight ends, what they were with Joe Royer and Sam Hart, like, those guys aren't being accustomed to being in the game or being aware of the game. But there are also times where Tanner McAllister was on the sideline at like 1:30 and needed to be ready to go in the game on the other 30. And they had to like yell, and like, I think Perry Aliano was really getting after him. Then there's another time where one of the defensive linemen was running off the field because it looked like they must have thought they had 12 men, and he didn't get off the field in time. So the flag went up, and I was like, well, they must have had a 12, you know, obviously this is going to be 12 men on the field. They called offsides. Like, so I don't know if that was the 11th man leaving the field, but he didn't get off and he had crossed the line of scrimmage. And so these are these things where it's like, why are these things, these mechanical things happening that shouldn't? And it's, you know, is it because Ryan Day is too focused on the play calling? And with the way they went at it in this game and the way they don't go at it in some other games, kind of reminds me of CJ Stroud and running. You go really hard at it in the games you have to. You don't necessarily do it in the games you don't. But I would then you would say, well, what about the 23 against Clemson? What about the, you know, these field goals in the big games? And that's, you know, I have no argument for that. And when I saw that he may, you know, talking about giving up play calling control, I think the net benefit is that he's more available for everything else.
Right. I think the point there is not that he's a bad play caller or that he's a bad head coach. The point is you're trying to do two jobs at once, and that means you can't. I mean, he is a very smart guy, obviously, and a very, very high functioning person. But at some point, you can't do two things at the same time and do them both at a level of excellence. It's almost impossible to do. And so you got to pick one. Do one thing at an A+ level rather than two things at a B level. That's just and hire someone else or have someone else in your staff do it. And, you know, Justin Fry has called plays before at UCLA and had some pretty effective offenses at UCLA, for example. So maybe it's Justin Fry, maybe it's Brian Hartline, whatever it is. It just feels like, and you can still have all sorts of say in the process through the week and all that kind of stuff. You can still cast a vote on stuff if you want to, but just take a little bit of something off your plate and you'll probably end up doing the rest of your job a little bit better. That just felt like it feels like he's been there long enough now that you can't just hand wave certain stuff as that was a one-off weird thing. Like, if they keep getting the same results during, you know, the same types of games, it's probably something that's worth looking at. And again, this is not me saying I know all the answers. This is me saying, look, it seems like there's a trend here that's a problem. It's worth exploring what are the possible causes and what possible ways might there to be to address them, very similar to the injury thing we talked about earlier.
Yeah, the one or two last ones, just little things here I have. The experience at cornerback, think what you will of the cornerbacks, having five guys that started a game this year is going to pay dividends next year. And, you know, when you've got four guys returning who have started, that's significant. And, you know, these are all guys who are hungry, who have dealt with injuries. So there's opportunity for them to really burst and become good players or great players. So there's something there. Also, Sonny Styles and Lathan Ransom, like at safety somewhere, you know, talking to Sonny Styles, and I said, hey, Sonny, what do you say to the people who don't think you can play safety? You know, because I've been that guy forever. Like, there's no such thing as a 6'5 safety. And he's just like, you know, I've been playing it my entire life. The coaches think I can play it. And if people don't think I can, you know, that's, you know, I think I've proven them wrong so far. And so, you know, Jim Knowles is going to put him at safety until he can no longer do it. And now, what does that mean in terms of what it was in this game was not what they need next year. I think you need him in the back end rather than as that basically strong side linebacker that he was with the short yardage stuff. So getting him back and giving him a significant role to see if he is, I mean, he was the number one safety in the 2022 class. So let's see what that becomes. Lathan Ransom he's been at a different position each year. Basically, I think he probably takes over for Ronnie Hickman as the adjuster next year, but he also needs to get better, and another season he probably will. And, you know, where's Kai Stokes in there? So I think there's some reason for optimism in the secondary because of all of the experience that these guys got this year.
Yeah, there's a lot of experience, and then there's a couple of young guys who have already flashed, who, the you know, you're already seeing signs the coaches are liking what they're seeing with them, with boy, Sonny Styles playing a lot of crucial minutes in a very crucial game. Okay, this is one of these, like, watch what they do and not what they say kind of things. What they're doing is telling you that they believe in Sonny Styles. And, you know, we've seen a lot of enough of Kai Stokes to think, okay, it feels like there's something there as well. So again, you don't need to hit on 100% of these, but if you get just most of these guys, some of these guys, you're going to have a decent safety rotation next year.
Anything else, Tom? I'm all tapped out.
I think we're pretty much set.
Perfect. See, there's plenty to look forward to next year. You don't have to think it's going to be a 7-5 season. 7-6, sorry. You know, there's reason for optimism. Ohio State are recruiting well. They're developing well. And it's, you know, when was the last time you had a bad season? It's been over a decade. So, you know, expect the best. And then when it doesn't happen, be very, very angry. So, want to thank you all for joining us. Feel free to find us at BuckeyeHuddle.com. Become a member. Say hello to us there on the message board. Like this video if you're watching right now on YouTube. Go ahead and subscribe as well. Hit the bell to be notified when we go live, when we drop new shows, all kinds of podcasts. You know what we're talking about. So, thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you guys later.